Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
Yes, good evening. My name is Sharon Mays, and I'm very happy to be with you all. Welcome. It's good to have you all with us. And I'm the co-host this evening of Politics on the Navajo Nation, sponsored by Cal Nez Design. Also, we are located here in Winter Rock. We'd like to thank very much Blue Sage Tea Company for allowing us to use their Wi-Fi connection as well as their phone lines just to do the show tonight. And Blue Sage Tea Company is a Native-owned company, and their product line includes tea bundles as well as smudging bundles and also soap. And if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about their products, they do sell on eBay.com. All you have to do is go to eBay.com, and in the search engine, just type in Blue Sage Tea, as in T-E-A. So we'd like to thank them very much. This is pretty exciting this evening. We're going to go to your host, Marley Shabala, and she is at the Twin Arrows Casino. She is attending the Navajo Nation Division of Resources Energy Summit. And so we'd like to say, hi, Marley. Great to have you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Perfect.
Well, yeah, good, good. Okay, Yata'e to our listeners out there, and this is Marley Shabala, Tohegleni Shlon, and I'm here at the Navajo Division of Natural Resources Energy Summit, and it started today, and it opened up with the welcome address by the Division of Natural Resources Director, Fred White. And then his presentation was followed by the Attorney General, Harrison Stokesy, and talked at great length about the history of energy development on the Navajo Reservation. And it was really a great presentation because he went back to the treaties which were dealing with the Mexican treaties, Guadalupe, Hidalgo, and also back to from there fast forward to the 1800s, which we're dealing with. He said he called them the Marshall Trilogies, and those were three laws that were created that greatly impacted Indian country. And it was interesting to hear him talk about those laws because in that perspective of energy development, because ultimately where his discussion went to was that the U.S. government has total control of Indian land, and of course, you know, that's Navajo land. And it was interesting what he said, too, because he said that because the federal government has control over Indian land, that they therefore had this scheme to create these laws that would protect those lands. And that's why Indians are only given the right to occupy the land. And he said that's why it's so difficult to do any kind of economic development on our reservation. And so ultimately that's why we have high unemployment. And, you know, the poverty rate is sky high, and there's just all these issues. And for individuals that live here on the Navajo Reservation, that can be very true, you know, if you're dealing and you're talking about property, I guess, or materialism. And as I was sitting there listening to him, I was thinking about those issues. And I thought to myself, well, you know, we have different definitions of what poverty is. And for Native people, that was the issue of dealing with of property rights. And, you know, that teaching that I received, which is that your wealth is actually guided by the number of grandchildren you have. But he also talked about that he has children. And that have we, is it fair for us to ask our children to live a life without electricity, without electronics? And it was interesting, kind of a question that was made by him. And I thought to myself, well, you know, he's saying we can make decisions for our young people. And but then I didn't hear anywhere in his presentation about how do we ask our young people? How do we get out their comments on what they really want as far as energy development, the development of natural resources here on the reservation? And that, you know, that includes the coal, the oil and gas, the forests, the wind, the air, the water. You know, have we ever held any kind of public hearing specifically for our young people? I was wondering, because if we are going to, and that's what he was talking about, if the nation, which is the Navajo Nation government, if they're going to make these decisions regarding energy development on our homeland, and they're talking about doing this for the youth, then there needs to be a serious discussion and a lengthy one with youth and get them involved, get them educated. If they're not educated, I think, well, this goes just to anyone, and even to myself. And, you know, Sharon, when we're talking about what topics we're going to cover on tonight's show, we were talking about what issues did we really were most knowledgeable about to talk about. And that goes back to what I'm talking about as far as involving the youth. If we want the youth to let us know what they want to do with the natural resources, with their homes, with their homelands, then we need to educate them about their government, about, you know, the global issues. And here at the Energy Summit, and I was just talking with a individual who came up to me, and he said he reads my blog, and he's an individual who deals with carbon sequestration and coal. And he said, you know, it's good to know what, you know, the other side, he says to me. And I said, oh, yeah, definitely. You know, we need to know what's going on with each other, you know, what each other is thinking. And I said, because I think we both care about the same issues. And what I would, you know, what we talked about was that there's a global question, I said, a global statement that I see missing here at the Energy Summit. All day long, not once did I hear anyone talk about climate change and the impact of fossil fuels on the climate, and that we are in a very serious state. But it's as if there's this huge denial by the speakers here at this energy summit that is sponsored by the Navajo Nation Division of Natural Resources. And the individual who heads the division is Fred White. He's a political appointee of President Ben Shelley. And President Shelley also didn't talk about climate change. Neither did, Harrison Sosie touched on it. I'm not sure. You know what? I have a guest here. Her name is Donna House. And And I, you know me, when I'm at any kind of a gathering, I'm busy blogging and taking care of my videos. And so, you know, I'm not sure. Did you hear anything, Donna, about the Energy Summit? I mean, in the Energy Summit about carbon sequestration or climate change?
Well,
okay, first, you know what, Donna? I want you to introduce yourself first.
Yeah, I am Donna House. I am originally from Oak Springs. My mother is Keaani, and my dad is Christian from Delcon. I am here with Marley, the famous Marley, and I am so glad she's here covering this because it's so important. One of the things, at least I noticed when we were gathering and listening to President Shelley, he was almost to a point where he was yelling at the audience in frustration and disappointment that there wasn't enough corporations here to move the Navajo Nation or advance the Navajo Nation to a point where we become more energy focused and all the jobs and roads and hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that there is no grand plan. I know that several years ago when the New Policy Institute put together a meeting about future of Navajo Nation, the head person of economic development, who is a different person who runs it now, mentioned that there was no plan, and there was no really a plan for investment or a plan going beyond coal. And that, to me, is a real big situation problem. I mean, that's a problem that the whole nation and communities really have to push and start thinking about as far as resolving it and addressing it. So he was yelling and basically saying that we need to develop. I mean, that to me was a big thing. We have a lot of coal. He blamed EPA for putting on new rules. He talked about the CO2 emission rules that came out to reduce carbon. And, you know, and he didn't even talk about the rule that it exempts Four Corners Power Plant and NGS, Navajo Generating Station, from the CO2 carbon. I mean, they are not part of the calculation of the CO2 that's outputted within each of the states. Each of the states have to come up with a plan to reduce their carbon by 2030, by 30%. And, you know, it depends on what state it is. It's less, more. So this is a real issue here. I mean, I am really disappointed that the attitude that he has as far as the world out there is against us and trying to stop development of coal. The problem is so much of our problems have come from the industry of coal and uranium, and as we all know, that's one thing that the Navajo Nation doesn't really think about as a future, the impact that it has on our health. So I'm concerned that all these companies that he's basically whining, or he's dining, I should say, besides whining, that he is not asking these companies to do any type of research, to invest money into health. And all they're doing right now is having universities investing money into developing the studies that actually counter any type of hindrance of development of fossil fuel on the Navajo. So the Navajo is very much on pressure, and we're going to continue to have these two plants producing coal, and not only this, but we have the oil and gas. I mean, the oil and gas emits methane, which produces CO2. Looked at the cumulative impact from all the energy development that has that most efforts right now. We have pipelines going through. Those contracts and agreements haven't been looked at. The water relating to those contracts haven't been looked at. The water as communities and citizens need to be involved in. I have a list here that of speakers, and I was disappointed that there wasn't very much time for alternative energy, renewable energy. I think that that needs to be something that we need to really talk about. I mean, there was no exhibits of future renewable energy, and one of the reasons might be because high price to put an exhibit up at 500. Of course, now they have 300 for nonprofits. But I did inquire whether or not they had a price for citizens of the Navajo, and they said no. But one thing that I'm concerned about is the 15 metric tons of CO2 that's been coming out of NGS since 2012, and over 530,000 metric tons of CO2 2012 too. So we're going to be like totally polluting CO2, and we got the permission, the okay from EPA. That's just not fair. Marley.
Well, Ms. House, this is Sharon Mays. Hello?
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, because you were in the audience, I was kind of, you know, you said that he was yelling or raising his voice and in frustration that more corporations were not there. And, well, number one, why is that the audience's fault? And number two, I'm kind of taken aback that he has not said anything, you know, during this conference in reference to climate change, because, you know, President Shelley has been lamenting time and time again about the drought situations, thus, you know, having to round up the horses and the range problems, and yet, honestly, there was no mention of anything to do with climate change?
No, there wasn't. Needs to be addressed. I mean, Navajo Fish and Wildlife is going to be doing a workshop on planning around climate change. And, of course, when I called them up, they just wanted to focus and just have it for chapter officials. But we need to be there, and we need to start planning. You know, climate change and the fossil fuel or any type of development on the Navajo has impacted rangeland. It has impacted rare and endangered species, cultural rare species, our medicines, our crops that we eat. I mean, we don't have the information of how much land has been impacted from coal, and including our health. So you're right. There's no talk, and it needs to be brought up by
administration. Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I can kind of hear, like, you know, genuine disappointment in your voice about, you know, there not being this conference not going into the future, you know, as one way to put it, you know, by discussing things other than, you know, what we already have with coal. I mean, you were talking about there was nothing
they
about
haven't even talked subsidies. What is the subsidies of, you know, putting this on? I mean, that it's handicapped. I mean, it's totally out. We need to think differently now. We need to start moving in a different direction. I mean, one thing that he kept bringing up is the potential of selling coal to Russia. He said he had the opportunity of meeting people from Russia. Is that right, Marley?
Yeah. He actually said that there is so much coal that there's over 200, there's enough coal for 200 years. and that China had not only approached him but also Russia. And so he said, why can't the Navajo Nation export the coal since there are federal laws dealing with, he didn't talk about climate change, but he said that there are federal laws that are hindering the Navajo Nation's development of its coal resources. So, you know, let's use what laws are available, he said, and just, you know, sell it to China and Russia. He used an example, which was interesting. He said that Navajo agricultural products industry, remember they were selling beans to Cuba, or they were planning to, and they were exporting, uh-huh, doing international trade. He said that they were told by the federal government not to be selling or not to be doing business with communist countries. But he said that Nappy Winahan did that. I mean, it was really interesting listening to his presentation. And he was the opening speaker in the afternoon session after lunch. He started out, well, he was pretty much yelling during the whole time, don't you think so, Donna?
Yes, Don? He was.
And he really got after his staff for not having more representation by the Navajo Nation enterprises and more corporations there. And he was saying, where is everybody? And I felt sorry for it, for the Division of Natural Resources staff. As conferences go, this was interesting. They had it moving along, I must say. They had the speakers, you know, going along. I mean, sometimes, you know, conferences can get kind of drag along, but the MC, who is Mike Colonna, who is the person that handles all of the he's with the Department of Land. He's the MC, and he was moving it along. He's doing a really good job. But like I said, as far as energy development on the Navajo Reservation, the speakers were pretty lacking in just a balanced approach. And it was interesting because going back to Attorney General Harrison Sosi, he used Navajo stories, Navajo history, that in promoting energy development, the energy development of natural resources. And he was saying that there has to be a balance, and that's what Navajo way of life is all about, is this balance, this equilibrium. He said, so therefore, we need to exploit the natural resources. And he says, and yes, people are talking about, selling jewelry and farms and solar and wind, he says, but that doesn't generate a huge enough or large enough revenues to support the tribal government.
It would have been great if he would have mentioned, like, all the agreements that we have with the fossil fuel industry and other corporations dealing with carbon, and also all the lawsuits that has helped move Navajo to a place of really considering safety for the planet, for animals, and for the people, although we need to push them further because a lot of the federal laws don't address people that have lived on the homeland. I mean, we've lived with these fossil fuel monsters and giants for 50 years, and not one health study. So that becomes a concern. I mean, that really becomes a concern. We need to look at the hydrology. We need to look at a lot of other things besides just taking the resource out of our ground and burying it and having to live with the impact. And not only that, but in the 50 years, our income, jobs, revenue hasn't been that significant.
What was interesting about President Shelley's presentation, too, when he talked about jobs, he was talking about how the uranium industry had created jobs for the cleanup. He said that there were 40 Navajo people that were trained to do the cleanup of the former uranium mining and milling and transportation. And he said that it was interesting because he says that it's a very, it's a skilled job, and not many people want to do it because it's very dangerous. But we have these Navajo people that were trained to go out and do that, and so there's this opportunity for jobs that were, you know, that uranium created, the uranium legacy. That bothered me. I wondered about that training that was being done, because I read about the opportunity that was being, it was being promoted as a job opportunity, a training opportunity, and so I certainly hope that our Navajo people who have received this training to do the uranium cleanup really understand how dangerous it is, because from what President Shelley said to the audience here, it is a very dangerous job. And what do you think about that, Sharon?
Well, I mean, okay, it created jobs, yes, for the cleanup. But that goes back to what Ms. House is talking about, you know, this total lack of concern, you know, for, you know, the safety of the workers to begin with. And it's kind of like, you know, we had jobs were created to clean it up, but think of all those people, all those Navajo miners that were affected and their families, because when those miners came out of those mines, you know, they were saturated in uranium. I mean, they were saturated. They were because they would be in, you know, water that was up to their thighs. That was at, you know, the Mount Taylor mine, and then their clothes had the dust on it. They breathed it in, and so it's just kind of an odd thing to, like, you know, are we supposed to be thankful for those jobs, for that cleanup, when we know, you know, what happened to all these people as a result of that? I mean, that's just like looking at one side of a coin. That, you know, that's a very interesting approach is what I can say about that.
It was a disturbing approach to that. And then he talked about how the federal government had not told the Navajo people about the dangers of uranium mining, and that they sent them in there. And Attorney General Harrison Soce also mentioned the same thing, that the treatment of the Navajo people was that we were expendable. And so
yeah.
It was interesting to listen to these two talking like that. Because, you know, out of both presentations, there was that bit of history, that bit of understanding, and then he just drops these things, you know, and you kind of fall back and say, wow, that's an interesting way of looking at that. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
the training that was done for these 40 individuals, that was done by the Navajo Nation Workforce Development, and it was actually funded by the federal government, then they better, you know, those 40 individuals better have been truly educated about the dangerous job that they're doing. The president, in his presentation, remember, Donna, when he kept holding up, he had a roll of red tape, and he put it on the podium. And he held it up, and he says, this is what is holding us back. This is what is hindering energy development on the Navajo Reservation. He said it's federal and tribal red tape.
And who did that again, please?
President Shelley.
Really? It would have been more impressive if he had wrapped himself up in the red tape, you know. It would have been a more powerful visual, in my opinion. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's good. You know, we each have our own thoughts. But anyway, yeah. Then he just, you know, as his parting remark was once again to pick up that red tape, and he looked at all of his, you know, employees and told them, you know, I want you to remember what we have to go through and what you got to do. He says every day. He says, so I want you to buy a roll of red tape and put it on your desk as a reminder. So if people are visiting the Navajo Nation, start walking around, they see these rolls of red tape, you'll know what it is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay.
And I think that there seems to be some discussion, maybe it's leading to reducing our Navajo laws and codes so industry can come on. And I think that that has always been a goal, to keep us in the dark. I think that that, to me, is really important. So it really becomes important to become involved in contacting, you know, your council delegate in writing or Navajo Times. I mean, what's coming up right now is Navajo Generating Station draft EIS. So this is important to bring a lot of the issues that everyone is concerned about. I mean, there's no data on how much coal, entirely coal, that's been going on for 50 years across the Navajo, how much grazeland has been taken, and has any of it returned back to grazing? Are we grazing those lands now? And I mean, we really need to become more attuned and proactive in protecting our rights here.
Yeah, there was an article in the Gallup Independent, and according to that article, since 1941, there have been 8,000 grazing allotment permits that have been issued. And the article went on to say that many of those allotments are dormant. They're not using them, and many of them are being overgrazed. So, you know, that was kind of mind-boggling. And I thought it was interesting, too, that, you know, this is anything to do with the rangeland and the grazing permits, you know, that's a hot-button issue for a lot of people here because they have so many family members who do have livestock. And I thought it was interesting that there was a comment made in that article that said, you know, grazing allotments are permits. They are not property. And that's where it becomes very, very sensitive because many, many people are kind of looking at those grazing allotments as property. But, again, getting back to, are we using the land? Are we giving it back? Are we nourishing it to so that it can come back? Or is it just, you know, being overgrazed where nothing can come back and live on it?
Well, that's part of what is happening that is not being talked about, which is climate change. And you're dealing with the lack of moisture from the natural moisture.
Yeah.
Right now we're in the monsoons. But if someone would go across the reservation and talk to people who have, and unlike other areas of the country, and I think in Indian country, mainly in indigenous areas, you have people that have lived in those areas, you know, since forever. That's, you know, that's where we live. Those are really our ancestral lands. And so we have years, decades, our grandparents know what the land looked like 100 years ago. And they have stories of it. And they can say, you know, there was a stream over there. You know, you have stories of that, where there were streams where offerings were made, and now they no longer exist or dried up. You can, in your own community, you know, within our lifetime, there are changes. I remember when I lived in Church Rock as a in elementary school, in the fifth grade, there was snow. I mean, it was almost up to my waist. And during the monsoons, there was an annual flood. And us kids would just jump in that water and just floated it. And it was great. And now that doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly,
that's,
Marley. You know, I was going to say that.
That's evidence of climate change.
Exactly.
But yet, who does the government blame? It's almost like this, what happened with the federal government and the livestock reduction. Oh, you know, you Navajos, you're allowing your sheep and your livestock to overgraze the land, so we're going to come out and slaughter them. And that had nothing to do with it. You know, there was no environmental impact statement that was done before they built that Navajo Dam up north. And that greatly impacted the land. And then now this issue is climate change, and it deals with the weather. And yet, who is being blamed? The horses. The livestock, once again, is being blamed.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it's just ignoring. And then to hear the Attorney General and the President not mention it, and then to hear the Attorney General say, well, I know that there are some people that that are against this development of our natural resources, but they're the ones that want to live in the past. You know, how many of you came here riding on a horse? And it was like, no, that's not what we're talking about. We are talking about conserving energy. We're not talking about taking it away. And it deals, it's difficult. Yeah, you know, you're going to have to deal with having to turn off your lights, not be standing there with the running, the water just gushing down the drain as you're, you know, brushing your teeth or, you know, talking. I've watched people in restrooms sometimes, and they just have the water going, and somebody will come in, and they'll start visiting, and the water is just gushing. Like, they could just, you know, that's a waste. That's an abuse. That's an abuse of a sacred element of life, and this is being done by our own people. And you go out to these areas.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, first of all, I just wanted to remind our listeners that they're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this is Politics on the Navajo Nation with your host, Marley Shabala. And I also wanted to add that, you know, talk about climate change, one of the biggest evidence of climate change is right here in Window Rock, and people drive by it all the time when they're going down, you know, between Window Rock and Fort Defiance. St. Michael's Housing is built, which is one of the main housing areas for people who, you know, aren't living on the Navajo Nation. But in Window Rock, St. Michael's Housing is built on the bed of a dry lake. Now, you know, how much more evidence do you need? I mean, that's phenomenal.
This is you're absolutely right. I mean, right now, climate change is real. I mean, there is so many documents, literature, science out there that says it is real. I mean, even there are documents already done on the Navajo addressing climate change and how the temperature has increased. So you're right, there is a climate change. I mean, even when you go out in the field and you talk to people, you know, when I was out in the field 15 years ago plus, I heard about the changes, you know, that this used to be here, now it's not here. So we have it in our own stories, our traditional stories. But science is just now catching up with the stories that, you know, our grandparents had and their grandparents had. So you're absolutely right. I think that I'm just surprised that our government officials and division directors and everyone that, well, basically said that climate change, that hasn't said climate change is real, and we need to fight the, you know, any type of regs that's trying to suppress fossil fuel development, any type of development that will bring in a job. And they always reference, you know, the documents on economic development that ASU put out, and, you know, that was not a document that one should use. So you're right, this, you know, change.
Well, just, you know, six generations ago in my family, we have a story, you know, about a relative, you know, a grandfather six generations ago, and how he would walk between Window Rock and Fort Defiance, and he was, you know, a young man, and the grass was up to his waist. And where is that grass now? And then I think that's a great point that you brought up, Ms. House, about, you know, these you know, changes are in our stories. I mean, just one of the simplest evidences of climate change is simply by the Navajo names of all these different places that are in reference to water, and there's no water there now.
Well, it goes back to what is happening not from here, from the Twin Arrows. To the west is Dokolosleet, our sacred mountain, Mount Taylor. And the lack of snow there is pushing the industry to produce artificial snow with the use of wastewater. And why do they have to do that? Because of the lack of moisture. They're not receiving as much snow as they used to. But they're not even talking about climate change, you know?
No.
There's no mention, acknowledgement of that, and why they're doing this. It's like, well, we don't have enough moisture this year, and we need, you know, the snow because we have the skiers out there and Flagstaff lives on this industry and blah, blah, wolf, wolf, instead of, you know, trying to say, well, you know, what we need to do is we need to really seriously look at why there is no snow instead of, well, let's replace it with wastewater. You know, there we go. There's a solution. That's just wrong. That's just wrong. That's just a huge amount of denial again. And when President Shelley was talking about the energy projects that he wants his staff and the Navajo Nation to back him up on, it's gasification, coal gasification, turning the coal into liquid. And then his other project is transmission lines. One of my friends was pointing at a transmission line, and he was saying, and he already knew. He says, you know, he says, my family that has livestock near these lines, he says, the livestock are getting really sick, he says, and where those transmission lines are, he says, there's nothing that grows around it. It's just not affecting livestock and humans. It's also affecting the trees. It's affecting the land. It's affecting Mother Earth, what we're doing. And then he also said that he wants to have the railroad again. He's talking about that railroad and using it to export the coal and the agriculture from the Four Corners area. And it would come, you know, from Farmington on down to Theroux.
And the big point about that, that's his home chapter. Let's not forget
that. He admitted it. He says, and it's in my hometown chapter of Theroux, but, you know, there's a spur there, and he made it sound like it was just happened to be that way that it occurred. And he has San Juan County and also McKinley County that now have said that he can use that state highway to run the railroad up through. So he wants to build that railroad right along that road. And so the counties are also helping him because it's a way, he said, for them to save highway funds. So instead of repairing the highway, they would put those semis on the rail. So they would be transporting whatever goods by rail. Hmm. And he also, you know, like I said, talked about the transmission lines. And he talked about, he said, you know, since we have all that coal, we should restart Desert Rock and it can be connected to carbon sequestration. And there was a company there that they're called Southern Company, and they have one carbon sequestration project. And the guy was here talking about it. And that company is also into uranium, but they're mainly into coal. And he said that President Shelley had come to him and they had wanted to get a tour of the facilities in Mississippi, of their coal-fired generating station, a year ago. So all of these projects dealing with the exploitation of coal, President Shelley has started over a year ago. And so it's come to this energy summit.
Well, please, Marley, I don't mean to interrupt you, but can you please, just as a technicality, we were hearing back when, you know, the tribe purchased the BHP coal mine, that there's a condition, is there not, that they can only sell that coal back to the Four Corners plant?
That will end in 2016. And that's my understanding. What's going to happen with that exiting of the coal? So I think that the president is really counting on getting reelected.
Okay, so you're breaking up. Please repeat that for everyone.
Oh, I said that. I think that President Shelley is really counting on getting reelected.
Okay.
Or maybe he's thinking that if he loses, that maybe the next president will hire him to head the Division of Natural Resources, hire him as a consultant. So, he's moving along. I mean, and what is this? This is July, mid-July, and the primaries are next month. But, I mean, all of a sudden you had these individuals talking about, hey, you know, we had this person and meet President Shelley, and someone else came up and said that, oh, yeah, you know, he's a consultant. He brought in the Norwegians, and they're talking about carbon sequestration. And this individual from the Southern Company said that, you know, to do that their carbon sequestration technology would even be better if they had the open-mouth coal-fired generating station. And that's desert rock. So these plans have been moving and rolling along. And people need to, that's why I came to the Energy Summit. And I'm glad that Donna House, who has worked on environmental issues since forever, and she's gotten this, she was, helped me get over here so that I could be here, videotape, and, you know, get those up on YouTube so people can actually hear and see President Shelley holding up that red tape. They can listen to the Southern Company official talking about a carbon sequestration plant that they have in Mississippi. They can hear the Attorney General talking about how we need to, you know, allow our young people to make decisions for themselves, and we shouldn't make it for them regarding energy development. And who else were the other speakers? We had the Bureau of Reclamation here. And the title of their presentation was Navajo Nation Energy Opportunities /Technical Working Group. The Technical Working Group is connected directly to Navajo Generating Station's environmental impact statement. And Bureau of Reclamation is the majority owner of Navajo Generating Station, right, Donna?
Yes, yes.
Okay, wait, you're breaking up. Please.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I guess so now I'm down, or not kneeling. The Four Corners Power Plant and NGS and Cholla has a common, they all have one thing in common, is that they're owned by APS. And APS and their owners have really to develop their own best solution to addressing SO2 and NOx. So when they did this, they did it in isolation, and it was not the best solution, and it's still not the best solution. I do believe that better solution than what exists. Again, it's really prolonging the life of power plant, you know, and that's what they're doing with Four Corners Power Plant. They just finished their draft EIS, and now it's going to be reviewed, and the decision is going to come out as far as an alternative to continue or to look at the mine extension, Intech's mine. Our mine, involved in that extension, continuing to mine the mine to provide coal to Four Corners Power Plant. I'm sorry. I hope I answered somewhat of the question or addressed.
Yeah, I would like to ask you, you know, because they're taking the position that it's their job or their duty to decide for everyone, young people included, what have you heard or what kind of reactions, Ms. House, have you heard from young people and other, you know, tribal members about, you know, that position? You know, it's like that we do this without, you know, any kind of environmental impact statements. Mm-hmm. You know, Navajo people don't get to comment, and if they do, it's just like a very, you know, short window. And, you know, what are people reacting? How are they, what do they think about that?
Well, from my talking and going to some of the early hearings regarding the BART regulations from EPA as far as looking at the Hays rule, there really wasn't an understanding of, you know, what the whole topic was about. And there wasn't an understanding actually at the very beginning with the council. They didn't really understand what that was about. And as time went, the concern, was becoming a huge concern because this would have an impact on NGS and its agreement, and, you know, we're looking at the water at the same time. So from what I remember, there was one hearing in Shiprock, and it varied, but this last speaker was a young man. I do believe he was still in high school. And actually, EPA has all the comments on their website. But he got up and said, I don't know if I'm for Four Corners Power Plant or not, but let me tell you about my friends. And he went on and talked about young people with inhalers and having problems to breathe from very young to high school. And his statement was so strong that that just makes one want to, like, do something about the problem that we have with fossil fuel. A lot of bad decisions. The market is bad, and we're invested in a mine. I just don't understand. I don't understand why we're investing into that technology. I mean, I try to bring humor to help balance the depression of where things are going in the development of our natural resources and the impact that it's having on our economy, our people, our plants and animals and insects and everything that is around and globally, because we're contributing to the CO2 and all the chemicals that come out of the power plant around the world. And the saddest part is, you know, we have up to 95% unemployment in certain areas. And we're investing our money in enterprises and creating enterprises that are not benefiting the people. We need to voice and get it in. I mean, so we send in our comments. What are they doing with it? You know, are they weighing it? Or how are they evaluating? And being online and having 5 days to comment is absolutely ridiculous. That leaves out the majority of the population of the Navajo. So my listening to the people, once you sit down with them and you talk about the economy, the market, you bring all these things in, which is, at least from my when I've been sitting down, comes from factual information, from, you know, information from the stock market and investment, people pulling out Goldman Sachs pulling their money out of investing in coal mines. These are facts that are happening, and it's not like where there are people are being fed information that's incorrect. That's not true. Same with the water issue. So the people on the ground are becoming more aware and concerned, and we need to go out and sit down and have coffee with them and sit down with the young people, because they're not young anymore. They have a voice, and they're very knowledgeable and very brilliant, and we need to listen to them.
Well, the question that I often hear from people, you know, yes, we need jobs, but why does it have to cost us our health? Why does it have to cost us our animals? Why does it have to cost us our environment? Why can't the Navajo leadership develop, you know, or take a position of developing jobs that are not going to basically kill our people? And that's what I hear over and over again, those questions. Why can they not? I mean, you know, they're supposed to be the brilliant minds of our tribe, and, you know, being
the
elected officials.
Well, the issue is that is what I heard from President Shelley and what I heard specifically from Navajo Nation Attorney General Harrison Sosi, is that these small businesses, which are basically farming, the livestock owners, the jewelry makers, arts and crafts, weavers, the cottage industry, doesn't generate money to run the tribal government. And that's sad, because those individuals are the ones that are not counted. They're counted as unemployed, but they're working. If you own a horse, if you own livestock, you are a hard worker. You have to get up early, you know, take care of your livestock. If you're a weaver, you know, that's amazing. What you see as far as the production of the designs that are in a rug dress, and these individuals who do these types of work, the jewelry, the potters, the ones that make the traditional Navajo foods, that have the squash out there alongside the road, the ones that are selling wood, that are recycling their clothing, their cookware, shoes, games, they're all contributing. Yet, have a government, what I hear, looks at them as if what they're saying, how the federal government treated the former uranium mining workers, they're expendable. Why? That's the answer. And they are,
Marley, you're breaking up. Turn your head.
Okay. There are things that not contributing to the government.
Okay, now you're breaking up, just to let you know.
Oh, okay.
There you go, better.
Okay, yeah, it's getting kind of windy. Your storm is coming. Can you hear me right?
Same here in Winter Rock, so there must be quite a bit of cloud cover and everything between us, between here and just outside of Flagstaff where you are.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, okay.
I just want to mention, I'm getting older here. You know, there are young Navajo people that are right now doing planning and renewable energy, right now in the field, providing alternative energy to elders and to communities that are out there. And we need them, like, right at the conference table, right there with the decision makers or whoever's making the decision. So we need to, like, make sure that we find a process to really seriously take the ideas further, advance them into our government, our community.
Well, Donna, and I support what she's saying. She's talking about the support of small business from the Navajo Reservation. And those are small businesses, and they do provide income. It may not be a huge amount of income that their tribal government can survive off of, but it's income that can support their family, that they can get their children through school, that they can, you know, have some gas to pay for their gas that's put in their vehicle so they can go into town and do their laundry and you know, buy some groceries. And those are, you know, and I didn't hear that at this Energy Summit today, was the development of communities, the president's constituents, out here. And even the Attorney General is like, oh, yeah, hey, you know, it was the revenues from the natural resources that built this Twin Arrows Casino and Resort. And that's a lie. They had to get a loan from the relocation of own people off of their lands that created a trust fund, because the federal government was involved in the Navajo-Hopi-U.S. land dispute. And as soon as they were relocated, who occupied their ancestral lands? It was Peabody Coal, and Peabody Coal is still out there. And there's enough sacrificing of the people, the land, the air, the water, Mother Earth, to generate revenues for the Navajo Nation government. They need to tighten their belts. At Twin Arrows Casino and Resort, and Donna House was looking around and she goes, where are the community people? They need to hear this discussion. They need to hear these presentations. They need to be educated, because it's coming off of where they live, and it does. But here we are in this resort, and I think the rooms are like $95 a night or something. I mean, it's a beautiful place, yes. But it took us 2.5 hours to drive out here. We're pretty close to Flagstaff, Arizona. And the speakers, I'm here, you know. People can listen or watch the YouTube video that I'll be, you know, downloading onto the YouTube website to listen. But why? Yes, I found out why. You asked why, you know, the leadership is not supporting small businesses. It's because small businesses do not produce enough money to generate the tribal government. They don't produce enough, over $100 million, so that the tribal government can operate. They don't produce enough money so they can build a Twin Arrows Casino and Resort.
But I thought that the purpose of the casinos, you know, was supposed to help with supporting the Navajo government. There are 4 casinos now, correct?
Well, this one is the one that's losing money. That was the report from the audit, and there were some of the council delegates were also talking about. They admitted it. They were questioning why the tribal gaming enterprise, was using the profits to get Twin Arrows out of a deficit. It's truly way off of the highway. And I asked some of the workers here, and they're students from Northern Arizona University. They're non-Indians, but they're here, and I talked with them, and I said, you know, so how's business? And they said, well, you know, the rooms have been full for a couple of days. And I said, well, that's good, you know, that's good for businesses, the tribal enterprise. And then we went down to the restaurant. And there was a line this morning, and the woman there was really flustered. She was like, you know, I'm the only one here. And it was like, that's really bad management. It would seem that this young student, Northern Arizona NAU University student, knew that the hotel was booked for several days, and so it seemed like the management here, the tribal enterprise, would know that and have additional people here so that you wouldn't have these have people standing in line, and some people were getting their orders wrong. So, you know, there's just these issues here with how government runs its business. Oh, yeah, and you know, that was interesting, too. The tribal attorney general, Harrison Soucy, was talking about how brought up the question of whether elected officials should be should be part of managing tribal businesses. And I thought to myself, but there have been studies that have been done that have shown that, you know, politicians should not be involved in business.
Right.
and then I thought to myself, so he's a political appointee, and here he is, you know, talking about energy development. You know, that makes no sense to me, you know. And you have, you know, the elected official, the president, you know, also talking about energy development. Oh, we're going to, you know, do this with coal. We're going to do that. We're going to make all this business. And I thought, well, you know, I guess they just, you know, what are they tall and tall? How do they make that comment, you know, the pot calling the kettle black, or the kettle
yes.
calling the pot?
The pot calling the kettle black. Exactly.
You know, and it was like, you know, why aren't we listening to people, our own people who are educated in economic development, who really understand sustainable economic development,
right.
developing community,
right.
not developing just because you need millions of dollars
right.
to fund a government, any government. That's why we're we have unemployment, because we wiped out all our small businesses. We wiped out our communities, and you make them dependent on convenience stores instead of, you know, those farmers that are really trying to keep farming as a part of their family way of life. Giving them funding, helping them get water to their farms, getting Navajo Housing Authority to do what they're supposed to do, you know, Navajo housing, you know, make houses and not these clusters of houses. But the way that, you know, and that's not about living in the past. It's about living now, but also that balance where you maintain family. And so you don't have homelessness. You don't have, you have a group there. Your family is there to help you if you have problems. Maybe you made a mistake and you blew your scholarship or something, you know, and everybody makes mistakes, but family gets together, they talk to that person. In the Western way, what do they call that, where you have everybody come together and talk to one friend? What
intervention? You mean like
yeah.
an intervention?
Yeah, yeah, you know, and that's real. We've always done that. We know what that means. And when you look at those that way of life that we still have it. We still do. I mean, it's a matter of getting support for it out there. And there's people out there that know what's going on, and Bureau of Reclamation used that. You have Navajo young people, educated young people, that talked about solar and how solar could be used around Navajo Generating Station. And instead of using the coal that comes from Peabody Coal to start using solar. And so it would be a reduction in the cost also. And the Bureau of Reclamation, I heard that project, those plans presented during public hearings on the renewable Navajo energy lease, and it was connected to the Navajo aquifer, which is where, you know, Peabody had been using, and they're still continuing to use. But it was those young Navajo people from that area where Peabody is, Black Mesa, Rocky Ridge, Pinon, all those areas, Hard Rock, they were the ones that came and looked at Navajo Generating Station and said, we're not saying no, we're saying reduce the use of coal little by little. And you could provide employment for those miners or their families or local people and switch to solar. These are the areas where you can set up these solar panels to generate those pumps for Central Arizona Project. But we also want Arizona to understand how much energy Navajo is producing for them down south. And the Attorney General brought that up. And there were individuals, companies in the who got up and spoke after him that recognized it. Bureau of Reclamation said, yeah, you know, we heard your travel Attorney General talking about Navajo Generating Station, Central Arizona Project, and we understand that. And so that's when he started talking about, oh, you know, we're looking at working with the communities to set up these solar panels around Navajo Generating Station to continue, you know, pushing the water down to Central Arizona Project. And I thought to myself, geez, that plan sounds so much like what I was hearing from Marshall Johnson and Nicole Horseherder and the other individuals. And then Donna House said, yeah, that was their project, and they've been working with the Bureau of Reclamation. And the Bureau of Reclamation started working with Navajo youth also on distilling the brackish water that's around Loop so that they could drink it and use it for the livestock. So when the federal government really wants to do something, and I'm not sure, I have a feeling that they're doing it probably just to keep Navajo Generating Station going so they can keep pushing the water down to the southern part of Arizona and also providing the energy. But they are, it's pushing them to work with the Navajo community. So if you have the Bureau of Reclamation coming in and working with Loop and these other rural communities, very rural communities, why can't our own people's government do that?
Mm-hmm.
And that has to get started. Because,
well, Marley, after hearing everything that you've reported and Ms. House has reported, I just want to know if you're kind of taken aback by the position of the Navajo you know, tribal government, our own president. Does it seem to you like this is going backwards and instead not going forward? Because when you talk about, you know, he's talking about desert rock. I mean, think about the history of that and how that was not wanted. And I mean, to bring that up again, it's kind of like we're pedaling backwards. Am I correct?
It is. It is definitely doing that. And Donna, you know, completely agrees with you. And the, you know, I want her to talk a little bit more about that. Like I said, she has a long history of this. And I want as many voices on our Blog Talk Radio so that the people can understand, you know, there are people out here that have been working in this field for years and years, and they have that information. They've been out there talking with the community.
Thanks, Marley, but most of my work has been, like, in conservation of cultural and biological diversity, but we all have that experience of seeing the growth of energy and jobs, and, I mean, just doing the work out in the field, everyone's been out there. There's so much that we can all do from the community as far as ideas that would advance our well-being at the local level. The tribe is stuck in an old place, and they are not coming up with ideas. They're moving in a direction that is not beneficial for the Navajo people. They have not considered renewable technology. Sustainable society that we have been in the past, that's still the future. And, you know, they're misusing, I believe, our Navajo philosophy to advance fossil fuel and uranium, et cetera, et cetera. So you're right. I feel that the people that are in office right now are there in departments are going in a different direction. And I think that I really am impressed with is the voices that are coming from all through the Navajo, where we stop the water rights issue of the Little Colorado River. You know, the council, I'm sure, is totally stunned by the voices that are coming throughout the whole Navajo that are impacting projects that they thought would go through.
Ms. House, wouldn't you say, would you agree that this election is in many ways unlike any other Navajo election we've had before, simply because so many voices are rising up in concern for our environment and our resources?
Absolutely. Not only that, I really believe that with the help of social media and voices of just sitting at the table and talking about what's really happening and passing information about indictments for mismanagement of, you know, funds from the local level to, you know, our national government, our own government. And we're not just standing by anymore. I mean, we are not. We're voicing, like, this is wrong. We are, you know, we're not going to accept this anymore. So I think that it's changing. It has been. And I see, and when I read the notes from Marley and listening to your show, I see that people are starting to think about really what to say, because they have to be accountable for everything they do and say. They're not getting away with things anymore than they used to. We're absolutely questioning things. Now we have more young people and older people are spending time researching and following through on whether or not that's a good idea or what the feasibility is of doing the project, et cetera. So you're right. It is a different situation because we're asking harder questions. And consistency. You know, I think with the help of Marley and Noel and other writers for the Navajo Times and other places, independent writers, are writing from a different place and giving information from a different place. People are writing into the Times and elsewhere and getting information across nationally even. So I think that's getting a lot of our council delegates all nervous. It's not like the same old same type of rhetoric.
Marley, we have
yeah.
Noelle Smith on the line, and I'd like to invite her to join this conversation, if that's okay with you.
Well, absolutely.
Hello, Noelle, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, Noelle and I were at the Navajo Nation Council session this week. It started on Monday. It was yesterday. And I understand that today they were finishing up. So I'll probably see a lot more council delegates tomorrow. But I want to talk with Noelle about what we saw there at the Navajo Nation Council Chambers and what was happening. And one of the first things that we saw was the horseback riders. And they had two horseback rides that came in to the Navajo Council session. And one of them is an annual horseback ride that's done by the Navajo Nation Council. And when I got there, there were about 21 horseback riders and some council delegates, some former council delegates, and in front of the Navajo Council Chamber was a podium, and Navajo Council Speaker Pro Tem Lorenzo Bates was out there greeting the horseback riders and allowing them to come up and get giving them the microphone, and they were sharing their stories of their horseback ride and the concerns of the communities that they went in. They were carrying their messages. And then I went into the council chambers to set up and came back out, and there was more horseback riders, and they were carrying flags, and these were the horseback riders that had called themselves the Four Directions Horseback Ride. And they were there to talk about the proposed Range Land Management Improvement Act, which was addressing grazing permits and also the horse roundups and the other issues dealing with the land. It was dealing with the range land. And there must have been, I think, maybe about 30 horseback riders, and they had their supporters there, so I'd say there must have been about 50 of them. And the council delegates that were standing out there with Mr. Bates came into the council, and then I saw I thought that they were going to greet them or acknowledge them, and instead Speaker Pro Tem Bates was going to walk away, and it was Leland Grass who's been very outspoken on behalf of feral horses and the horses, and opposes the horse roundups. And he walked up and said something to the speaker, and the speaker handed him the mic and then just turned and walked into the council. And so Mr. Grass, you know, just started talking about why they were there. And did you see that, Noelle?
I did not see the interaction between Mr. Grass and Mr. Bates, but I did observe that from, I didn't see many of the delegates acknowledge the group, the second group that rode into the chamber area. And from my observation, I think the only real delegate that stayed and you know, took time to listen to the concerns of those group members was Russell Begay. I noticed he was out there for quite some time, and he even mentioned their efforts on the council floor when during the president's State of the Nation address. And I also heard a comment or two from Delegate Mel Begay, who also mentioned that, you know, these people had ridden far and had some concerns and wanted to express them, and they're within their right to do that, and that they should be heard.
That the group that was out there, they must have got there about 10 o'clock, and then the first thing that the council did, of course, was, you know, they have their the invocation and the adoption of their agenda. And then President Shelley does his State of the Nation address, and then the speaker does a report to the council. So President Shelley came in with his entourage, and he was in there until, what time? I'm not sure about how long he was talking. Do you remember, Noelle?
Let's see. They usually give him 20 minutes to do the address, and then from there they do their, you know, questions and comments, and then if they don't call for a vote, they allow him to respond to those questions and comments. I think they might have spent about 2 hours on the State of the Nation report, my estimates.
Because when he finished, it must have been maybe about 3 o'clock. Because I know that they started, you know, they had a long time doing their announcements, which they usually do. And then they had a huge debate over the agenda because Council Delegate Leonard Sosi was trying to remove that legislation to do away with his subcommittee on uranium. And so they didn't get to the President's State of the Nation until an hour or so later after 10. So maybe it was one, I can't remember. But anyway, what I'm trying to make a point of is that the Four Directions horseback riders were outside that whole time, Mm-hmm. They and they stayed there. And I was out, I think I left about 4:30 after I did an interview, and they were just breaking up and leaving, and they had been speaking at length with Vice President Rex Reed Jim. But during the President Shelley came in and he started giving his State of the Nation address, it was Delegate Delegate Leonard Tsosi,
right,
who interrupted him and said, you know, that he wanted the Speaker Pro Tem to go outside and tell those people to be quiet. And he mm-hmm. said that, you know, they've been out there talking for 2 hours, and so that's enough time for them to express their concerns. And he couldn't hear the president because their microphone was so loud and they were so loud. And that was the whole point, though. They wanted someone to listen to them, and they were trying to get their attention. Each of the speakers that went up there to turn and look at the council, you know, and tell them, why aren't you out here, you know, why aren't you out here listening to us? Why won't you come out and hear us? And so Speaker went out there and shut off their microphone. And former Arizona State Representative, I happened to, when I went out there and coming back in, or not, I stayed out there for a while, but when I was out there and Speaker was walking back in, former Arizona State Representative Sylvia Laughter went up to him and told him that he was wrong to do that. She was really upset with him.
Oh, so that was the lady he was talking to at the entranceway.
Yeah, that was her.
Okay. I was wondering who he was speaking to, because I think they maybe spoke for about a minute or two, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I went outside, too, to see what's going on, but by the time I got out there, they had, you know, the speaker had shut off, and Bates was standing there and talking to Ms. Laughter, so, okay. I was wondering what was, I thought something might also happen as a result of what he was asked to do.
And, Council Delegate Leonard Tsosi interrupted the president's report while he was giving it to make this point about shutting off the microphone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were
I've never seen that happen. I've never seen a delegate interrupt the president's report. That's something different.
Yeah, I was really that really bothered me. I was bothered that they were not welcomed, that they were not acknowledged, that the speaker turned his back on them and went in, because there were elders out there, huh, Noel?
There were elders. Not only that, I mean, some members of the council made it sound like that they were being, I don't want to say, I can't think of a better word or lack of a better word, but they kind of made themselves seem like they were the victims, that all these people came in and, you know, they're being loud outside and, you know, trying to disrupt our business inside, you know, we're the ones that are having to deal with this. And, you know, the people outside are within their rights to gather and be outside and express their opinions. You know, I think if they were allowed inside the chamber to address the council, you know, even 15, 20 minutes, they would have been happy with that. And that's what they were trying to do, is just get some kind of acknowledgement that they have an opinion and they wanted to voice it.
Exactly, and how many, you know, we're hearing, and I've seen, you know, reports on President Ben Shelley's Facebook page, you know, that he doesn't want people to make remarks to him on Facebook. He wants them to say them to his face. Well, there was a good chance for that. I mean, these people really wanted to talk about this issue, you know, of the horses and the drought and the overgrazing or the rangeland and taking care of all of that. And there was an opportunity, you know, for him to at least to have welcomed them. But
mm-hmm.
let's face it. I mean, you know, there seems to be every time someone comes, even a child who wants, you know, a road to ride safely to school, you know, for her and her brother in their school bus. There's no welcoming at the council chambers. How many times now on this show and are we hearing about these kind of incidences happen where people have genuine concerns, whether they're elders or children, and they're just like bumping into this glass wall at the council chambers? There's no welcoming. There's no acknowledgement. There's no compassion about, you know, what is going on with these different people that want to be heard.
Not only that, it's not like they, you know, came as a surprise that morning. I mean, this was planned, and it was, you know, I saw postings about it on Facebook. I saw flyers posted in the chapters around the Farmington area. I mean, I saw flyers at the convenience store at Burnham Junction saying, you know, we're going to have this trail ride. Please come join us. You know, we're accepting donations. These are the people you contact. So it's not like they just showed up out of the blue sky. I mean, there was planning involved. There was advertising involved. So the leaders knew they were going to come, and they could have, you know, accommodated them and said, okay, we'll give you some time. And that's what got me a little caught off guard about the whole thing.
You're right, Noelle. There was a lot of publicity that went out about this Four Directions horse ride. They were there at the Navajo Nation Fairgrounds in Winter Rock. The both horseback riders came in about the same time on Sunday, and the council horseback riders, they were given a meal and taken care of, and it's just so hurtful. These individuals rode for several days to the council chambers, and to be treated the way that they were treated is what I hear about how the council delegates feel when they go to Washington, D.C. and are ignored by congressional representatives. And yet, that's what happened. That's how they treat their own people. They came
good
on
point.
And when you have these individuals who came, and they were elders, and they all, almost every one of those speakers spoke in Navajo, and they had a young man there who had come back from Afghanistan and Iraq. He was carrying an American flag, and he stood there, and he was asked to speak, and he said he didn't want to, but there was someone who did speak on his behalf and said that, you know, he rode because he wanted to protect the horses. He was there to protect his homeland, to protect his family's grazing permit, because they were hearing about these provisions that were going to prohibit the probate of grazing permits. And it's true. Under the proposed Rangeland Management Improvement Act, grazing permits would no longer be part of the probate process. The individual whose name was on the grazing permit, and if that individual passed away, then that grazing permit would return to the tribe, and it wouldn't be probated to another family member. But there were serious concerns there, and there was a young horseback rider. She was female, and I did an interview with her, and she talked about how she had become so, she was so afraid of having her horse stolen when she got to Winter Rock, because horses had been stolen by an elected grazing official, and there were witnesses that saw it, and the grazing official finally admitted, yes, he had taken the horse and told her that it was going to be sold. It was taken down south, and it was going to be sold to Mexico, and maybe she could get down there. She went down there to try to find her horses. And then she talked about what she went through. She became very emotional, and she talked about how these horses, what her teachings were, that you do certain prayers for your horses, and those prayers are so that you become as one with the horse, so that if the horse is feeling thirsty or is hungry, you can feel that. It's like how we, as maybe mothers and grandmothers, we have this sixth sense when our children are hurt, you know, even though we're away from them, and we kind of look around and we like, there's something wrong. I know there's something wrong. And that's what she was talking about. And she had gone through trying to find her horse, and she couldn't find him. She never found him. But she said that what she went through, and it was done by a tribal government official, she was so paranoid about what might happen to the horse that she had rode in the horseback ride that she slept right next to the horse. She didn't want to just leave it in the corral. She couldn't do it. She didn't want to. And this young lady was part of that horseback ride. She was the one that helped organize it and put it together. And her mother was the one that donated two sheep that were butchered, and they were ready to be cooked, and they needed a grill, they needed help. And they weren't able to provide for the other horseback riders, cook for them, until 11 p.m. that night. They finally were able to track down a grill and get some help and set up a little camp. And I don't know how close they were camped to the council horseback riders, and if they saw those riders being fed by the speaker's office and other council delegates, and if we're just ignored there too. And in our Navajo teachings, you know, we've talked about this, Noel and Sharon. When someone comes to your home, you give them, you know, whatever you have to drink and to eat. And that was not done for our own people. And when I hear our leaders over here talking about, hey, you know, we can't live in the past, it's like, we're not asking to live in the past. We're asking for respect, for the fire, the air, the water, Mother Earth, for our relatives. And yet that's what happened. And I think that the only thing that probably brought me back up after watching and listening to all of that was that the council on Tuesday voted 18 in favor and 3 opposed to remove the subcommittee that was trying to draft an agreement with Uranium Resources Incorporated for an in-situ uranium mining project near Turtle Rock, New Mexico. And this is only a few days after the communities out there in Church Rock held their 35th commemoration of the United Nuclear Corporation's uranium tailings flood. I mean, people call it a spill. To me, a spill is like when you knock over your glass of water, glass of milk, or, you know, cup of coffee. That was a flood. That was a flood. And Noel, you were there when Delegate Soce tried every way possible. I mean, even before that, remember at what was 7:30 in the morning at Quality Inn, Noel?
Yeah, they had that informational meeting where 9 delegates showed up, and Leonard Soce, you know, talked about how this arrangement was made and what was entailed in it, and that, you know, that the Resources and Development Committee was within its right to create this subcommittee and this subcommittee to move forward on, you know, negotiating disagreement with Uranium Resources Incorporated. And the arguments he presented at the information meeting were the same arguments that he brought to the council floor. And during the council's discussion, I didn't once hear anybody say, you know, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, let's go forward. They were like, no, we don't want this. We have 2 tribal laws in place that address uranium. Both of them say no. One says no more mining. The other says we're not transporting this mineral on our lands. And, you know, those are in place. We're not going to go against them. And the other comments were, you know, enough is enough with uranium. We've dealt with this in the past. We've seen the effects on our communities, you know, environmentally, and we've seen the effects on the people's health. And throughout that whole conversation, I kept thinking, I wonder, you know, I was curious if Leonard Sosie has family members who were affected by uranium, because, you know, a lot of delegates brought up cases of, you know, one of my relatives worked in the mine, and later in life, you know, they developed cancer, and that, you know, eventually took their lives, and because of that, I don't want to support this bill. Others said, you know, they've watched their community members go away from this. I mean, Catherine Benally mentioned how in Denahotso chapter, it's rare to find a man who's between the ages of 60 and 90 years old, who, because majority of them worked in the uranium mines around there and have died from complications related to it. And it was, I mean, it was a lengthy discussion, but it was a good discussion.
The discussion in the debate over that legislation, which was sponsored by Council Delegate Edmund Yazzie, really, really went into the history of uranium, and they talked about the health effects. And Council Delegate Jonathan Ness says that his community up in Utah, they had a uranium mine there, and they were finally able to get it cleaned up. And he said the same thing, that he was very concerned about the health impacts. And Yazzie said that, you know, he had invited Council Delegate Leonard Sosie out to the 35th commemoration of that tailings flood. You had tons and millions of gallons of liquid radioactive waste just dump into that Perco.
And the real Perco.
Those community people talked about how They had no idea where all that water came from, and it was like, wow, the flood is here, the annual flood. And they waded into that water. And later on, some of them had to be hospitalized. Most of them that waded into that water actually had to be hospitalized because their legs were burned. Their feet were burned from the radioactivity. Mm-hmm. And the people out there are having a hard time breathing. I was out there for one day, And it started getting windy in the afternoon. And the next day, Sunday, my throat felt like I had been yelling, and it just burned. My throat burned, and I was coughing and blowing my nose, and people were asking me, do you have a cold? And I said, no. One day I was out there at Redwater Pond Community, out at Church Rock. And that one day, and I could feel those effects. And to really feel what those people are going through, just one day, but they lived there day in and day out. These little children were out there. They were carrying these signs saying, no more uranium. So much energy running around with their signs and just having a great time because there were so many people out there. The community, you know, stayed there in the tent the whole day. And they were so happy that people were out there. And they didn't ask for donations. They didn't ask us to bring food. They didn't ask anything of us. They were the ones that were making fry bread, serving us food, handing out water, asking how we were doing. And these were people that were sick, and they had an annual walk that they go to the site of the dam that broke. And some of them were only able to walk up a small hill where the walk started from. And they were the ones, though. They were the ones handing out free T-shirts. You know, I saw the T-shirts. They were beautiful. And I asked them, I said, where do you get a T-shirt? You know, can I buy one? I thought maybe they're doing some fundraising. And Edith Hood, who was one of the organizers, said, no, she goes, just sign up. She goes, it's free. We give them away. We give them away every year, she said. And they handed out, when you registered, they had a question at the bottom that asked you if you were going to come back next year. And I thought that was so heartwarming that they would ask that, you know. But that's how much it meant to have someone go out there and just be with them for one day. And so I'm going to go back out there next year, and I'm going to stay there again, and I'm working on my videos and trying to download them, and you can hear the speakers. And former Chairman Peter Sinsaw was out there, and he was the one that made the initial ban on uranium mining. And he explained why he did it. He said that he did it because of what happened. He knew, he understood that uranium caused cancer. And he said that he told his staff that until there was a cure for cancer, that there should be no more uranium mining, milling, any kind of exploration. And he said, of course, the uranium companies came to him, you know, and offered everything under the sun. And he told them, you're wasting your time. You're wasting my time. Unless you can tell me you have a cure for cancer, then we'll sit down and we'll start to talk.
Marley,
he said that they never came back.
A couple of thoughts. First of all, former Navajo President Peter Sinsaw, he is running. He's the running mate with Russell B. Gay. Who else besides Mr. Zaw was out there? Any other Navajo officials, elected officials?
There were elected officials there, and out of respect, the community members did allow them to speak. But there were other organizations that came in. And they were from Laguna, from Acoma. There were actually people from Grants, which is where they, you know, they had that. I mean, that's where the uranium boom was at, was uranium, was Grants. And they had organizations from other reservations also that came in to show their support. There was a sister from Gallatin, Mexico, who came in to show her support. There was an elderly woman who, I think they came in from Utah with her daughter. There was just, you know, a lot of other indigenous people that were there. And I know, you know, that question about elected officials, you know, you want to know who was there. But these people that were there, They were there last year. And I don't know if those elected officials were, or these politicians were there last year.
Hmm. Well,
know?
I know that on Facebook.
And so, you know, whether or not, you know, I don't know. You know, I guess it's just this issue of dealing with, you know, this issue of uranium. And it's been out there since 1979. And what they talked about, too, was that this legacy of uranium just didn't start in 1979. It started before then, in the 50s, with the uranium mines, and that's what has to be talked about. And that the issue over what's happening with the and that was their concern, is that even all of this suffering that has been going on, not only there in Church Rock, but across the reservation. Oh, there was a group that came from Tuba City, and that's what I mean. Uranium is a reservation-wide issue. It's global issue. It's gone out to Acoma and out to Laguna and out at Havasupai. It's a global issue. It was in Germany. They have an annual international uranium forum that occurs. There,
Laguna also has a ban on uranium mining. The Pueblo
of
Laguna.
What I'm talking about is uranium industry. It's even here at this energy summit. This group, this Southern Company, was talking about clean energy and that it's nuclear energy. And that's what people see as clean energy. And so, you know, those are issues that our reservation is having to deal with. And there's a water study that I posted on my Facebook, and I think I posted it on my website, about the water quality across the reservation. And I'm not sure if, Noelle, did you do that story on, or do you receive the information I'm not sure if you were the one news reporter that did that.
On what, the water quality?
Yeah, water quality.
Nope, I haven't reported on that, but I did hear a report about it when I attended the Navajo birth cohort study preliminary results gathering last week in Shiprock. They had mentioned some of the different water sources on Navajo and whatnot.
Oh, you know what? I wasn't able to get to that birth cohort study, but they had someone there too at the 35th commemoration. Trump, can you share that? I wanted to hear what happened and what they reported.
Well, it's really preliminary results, but they talked about one that they're still recruiting pregnant women to be part of the study, and not even just the pregnant women, but also the fathers if they want to be included. And what they do is they take blood and urine samples, and they track the woman's full pregnancy, and then they track the baby's development for up to a year, and they want to test different levels of minerals that are found in the system. So I think, if I can recall correctly, the four that they look at is arsenic, lead, and I forgot the other two because I don't have my notes in front of me. But they look at those levels and they compare it with groups of the same age that are in the area or other age groups that are non-Navajo, and they see where those levels are. And this all has to do with the uranium, because they know some individuals do live by either abandoned uranium mines or have a history of, you know, uranium in the family, as far as like maybe their mother or father or grandparents had worked in the uranium mines or in the milling processes. And there was a lady there from the Navajo EPA Water Division, and she talked about some of the water wells that are monitored, which are the drinking ones. They don't monitor the livestock, and how they use different systems for the water to pump the water and stuff, and that some of these water tanks are prone to vandalism. And if, you know, they find out that, you know, she said like one time a group of kids had gotten into one of the water wells and swam around in it, and so they had to shut that particular system down and flush it out and clean it out and, you know, restock it with water. But they do testing on those sites. And but the problem is they're so short-staffed and underfunded that they can't, you know, address a lot of these issues in regards to maintenance and upkeep on these water tanks. And they're just trying their best to do what they can with what funding they do receive.
So did they talk about the what they have found at all about the impact of the uranium on the pregnant women and stillbirths?
No, they didn't go into that because, like I said, it was preliminary results. They just started recruiting individuals February 2013, so it's been about a year of studying, and they have, from what I recall, a 5-year grant. So they're still kind of at the beginning stages of it, and they just kind of wanted to present what they've been doing up to this point, and I think, you know, just spread the word that they are continuing to recruit individuals for this study. And, okay, so when they collect the samples, what they do is they test for 36 different metals or metal compounds. And they try to get the women to enroll as early as possible. And let's see. First, they can monitor the mom of starting at for 36 weeks, and that's when they just collect urine samples. And then at the time of birth or delivery, then they collect a blood sample. And then the baby, they collect the blood cord or the cord from the blood. And then they follow that baby for 1 year, and
they want to
compare what was in the baby system at the time the baby was born to what's in the baby system as they develop for that year. I guess history, you know, the levels rise or decrease or whatnot. And then they also do the, they also report the, they're starting to report the results back from the first set of participants. And so the young lady who presented the preliminary results, they've mailed for at least 30 results back so far. And they do have a bit of a criteria for participating in the study. Let's see. Let me see if I can find that real quick. I'm looking at my notes right now.
What I understand is that the funding, which is federal funding for the birth cohort study, actually came from the congressional hearings that were done regarding the former uranium mining, milling, exploration that was out here on the Navajo Reservation. And that happened because of a book that was written by a New York Times or was it New York Times or one of the journalists?
I think it's Los Angeles Times. The one of the presenters there had mentioned that this initiative was kind of started from the communities and from the people. I guess there was a gathering.
Ladies, excuse me. I don't mean to interrupt. We have one more minute left.
Oh.
So if you'd like to hear your closing remarks, I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. Noelle, finish up, okay?
Oh, I was going to say that the guy said that this started off from a community meeting a few years back where they said they wanted to know what was going on and they wanted to see what the health effects of uranium were in terms of, you know, passing from mom to baby. And so they were part of the group that said, let's get funding, let's push for funding, let's get, you know, Congress to give us some money so we can address these issues. And so that's where it started off, and it continued on until they got the funding, and now the study's going through.
Well, thank you, Noelle, so much for that.
Mm-hmm.
Marley, would you like to say your closing remark?
Well, I just want to thank you, Sharon, for, you know, being there and making sure that our connection was secure. Since my phone connection here was, you know, getting, you know, scattered there. So, you know, I just want to say thank you to you, and I want to say thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to Noelle and also to our guest, Donna House and Ashat. And have a beautiful day, and may peace prevail on Mother Earth.
Listening to Blog Talk Radio and Politics on the Navajo Nation with your host, Marley Shabala. Thank you all for joining us, and please join us next week. We'd like to also thank Calnez Design for sponsoring Politics on the Navajo Nation. Thank you.